Now let us start the thing rolling here. We have a certain arrangement. The ego is living its life in terms of a certain moral order, certain ideals for itself, relationship to the society, everything seems fine. Certain kind of anima or animus that will relate to that in an orderly way, and there are no problems. The shadow is kept down out of sight and isn't very troublesome. But now, when the ego becomes the least bit unsure of itself, uncertain, or inadequate to the occasion, things start to happen. This we may call the precipitating crisis, that which starts things rolling. It may be one of four main types. First, you are older than you think. The person is still interested in his golf score. It's deteriorating. That isn't where his interest ought to be. He is no longer a youth. He is a person moving downhill, and there is a gradual drop away from the life of that he thought was the adequate one for him. Or people who can't give up their childhood, women who are continually little girls until it's a bit too late, and then they have the calamity of realizing too late. This is one of the crises, the having passed a life threshold without knowing it, and acting in a way that is inappropriate to your biological age, inappropriate to your psychological age as well. More dramatic is what happens when a person has a relaxation of demands upon him. A man has spent his whole life striving to become the shoelace czar of the world, and he owns every shoelace factory in the place. And this took up a lot of his energy, his will to power energy. He's a man, a power man. In doing that, he let all the joys, all the pleasures, all the delicacies, all the exquisiteness of life off to the side. And then, at a certain time, he has all the shoelace factories. Furthermore, he doesn't have to do much about it because his secretary's taking care of it and all that kind of thing. So he has disposable libido. Mm-hmm. And where does the disposable libido go? It goes over into the other camp. And suddenly, little girls look a little more interesting than they used to seem. And his family says, well, what's happened to Daddy? He's coming home later and later, and some nights he misses entirely. And here is a man now in a compulsive relationship on an inferior level, an undeveloped level, to the whole world that was inferior and neglected in his major life. And he becomes very much concerned about this. He may go into this and lose his social reputation and everything else, or he may take the other attitude of holding himself back. So one third of his energy is going chasing the girls, the other third is keeping him from doing that. There go two thirds of his energy. There's only one third left of the business, and the business begins to go to pieces. This disintegration is the disintegration of late middle life to a for a person who just isn't pulled out by life, not challenged anymore. It's gone over the other camp. And in the case of a woman who has given her whole life to love, she's out there, her whole soul is out there in her family, then the family is fledged and she's left with an empty house and she begins to go crazy. And she becomes what's known as a mother-in-law. She is always in on the other home, living her life all over again with her daughter's children. That's the only profession she knows anything about. And she can be nice when babysitting is wanted, but you don't want her to tell you how to open the windows, how to shut the windows, how to cook the baby's food, and all this kind of thing. So this sounds kind of silly when you talk about it, but it's no fun. There's a compulsion here. The person cannot help it. The unconscious has taken over, and you are in a plunge. This is the second thing that can happen. The loss of outer demands, the relaxation of outer demands, and disposable libido around. This, I think, is the great problem of the world that we are now moving into, where 2 hours work a day is almost more than any union will allow an employer to require of an employee. So what are you going to do with the other 22 hours? listening to the radio is not enough, or to the television. The whole problem of, if I were a young person wanting to make a lot of money, I would go into any business that had to do with how to have fun. Skis or cameras or whatever else comes along. The leisure time problem is no longer just a fun problem, it's a major socio-psychological problem of our society. There are two of the crises. Now, the third crisis, possible disorganizer of the structure of the psyche, or the poise of the psyche, is the loss of conviction in your moral order, in your moral system. This happens in college campuses every year. Students come from one kind of society that sees this as the proper way to live morally and other people as being immoral, and another student comes from over here where it's quite different. Then they become roommates. Each finds that the other is quite all right. Each loses respect for his own system, and there are no rules anymore. The dislocation of a moral of order, which has been holding you in form so that those things which would disrupt rather than support your life are kept out in the shadow field, come up and the shadow takes over. This I called in my years of teaching on Sarah Lawrence campus, where we have a good deal of this thing, the phenomenon of the jeune fille communiste. She has come from a home on this side of the track. She suddenly finds that her father, and she learns this from Professor Blitzbaum in the first class in sociology, her father's business is based on blood and bones. He has exploited everything. She's wearing is the blood of some poor little child who was crucified in some ditch somewhere, and she begins to let herself go to pieces. And in about 2 weeks, she's a ravenous reformer of the world in terms of the two concepts she got at that class, and she's off. Now, she's just as nutty now as she was before, only the other way around, and without any particular, attractive aspects of what's happened to her. She's a nut over on the other side. She has gone into her shadow. She has identified with the shadow. She's over on that side, and compulsively so. She is our campus activist, typically. Well, all you can do is be glad she's in an institution and on the world, and perhaps by the time she gets out of school, she'll have learned a little more and be a little more balanced and know how to handle this thing. Daddy may never love her again, but she will have other people who do. This is the tip over. This is an antiodromia happening very early in life that can lead to a sort of travel on her own, in her own direction, far, far away from the world of the family. Now, when that happens, the anima image is totally transformed and goes into its negative. That is to say, you have gone into the shadow so that the very people that your family most abominate are the very ones that attract you most, and the old animus becomes simply that against which the new one moves. This is being drawn away from the form in which you live. This is the lure to the great adventure of the individual life. You're going out and you may find that you develop a very, very wonderful life from this great, great departure. This follow of the lead of the call to adventure. But you're out in the place of high winds and great dangers, and it's good to know that and not to feel that things are going to be quite simple anymore. So here are three of the initiators of great turbulence in the psychological situation. First, that I named was that of being older than you think and having to shed your childhood condition. Often this comes so late that the whole realization is tinged with this tragic feeling, too late, too late. Related to that is, of course, the relaxation of demand so that you have an antiodromia in the way of disposable libido, which goes flying around over in the undeveloped side of the psyche. Or now the loss of bearings with respect to the moral order of the world in which you are going to live. But the final and most tragic is being faced with an intolerable decision. In the Bible, the most important example of this is the problem of Abraham, when what he took to be God told him to kill his son. Now, he has to make a decision here between killing his son and disobeying what he takes to be God. And they are. That's an intolerable decision. The attitudes that he has cultivated with respect both to God and to the son are inadequate to this occasion. Abraham was, he didn't have to face it. He went through, he decided to obey God, and he didn't have to do the thing that he would have had to do had God let him go through with the decision he had made. I remember a very interesting talk I heard of from Martin Buber some years ago, and he was saying very nasty things about the Phoenicians who had killed their eldest sons in honor of Moloch. And then about 1/2 hour later in the lecture, he was saying very fine things about Abraham, who was about to do the same thing for Yahweh. And I raised my hand, and when he very kindly asked what I would like to know, I said, Dr. Buber, how does one distinguish between a divine and a diabolical invitation? And what do you mean? And I said, well, only half an hour ago you were disparaging and excoriating the Phoenicians for doing the very thing that you're now giving praise to Abraham for having attempted to do. And the answer from Martin Buber, the great existentialist, was, we believe God spoke to Abraham. Well, that cleared the scene anyhow. So how do you know? How do you know? You're up against an intolerable decision. People have to face these occasionally when life brings you right up against it. Are you going to let your family starve, or are you going to be a murderer or a thief, if those are the only ways open? Moral order that you have been living by is shattered here, and you move into another category.